Hi there, it's Amy Guth, host on WGN Radio.
And I'm Rex Hupke, a terrible columnist with the Chicago Tribune.
And as we're moving towards the election, discourse is at an all-time high in this country, and we're very civilized, and we're thoughtfully...
Shut up, Amy!
We're thoughtfully having conversations.
Stop it!
Shut up right now!
For God's sake!
I swear to God, I will go over
you.
Punch you! You! So, in a civilized way, let us take a look at what's happening in political headlines right now. Hey there, Amy Guth and Rex Hupke back for another edition of Guth and Hupke on Politics, because holy moly, like we said last time, we would only have to wait a nanosecond and there would be so much more. And I think we closed last time by saying something like, I can't wait to see what crazy things befall us between now and then. And indeed, here we are.
It's like Christmas for crazy.
We had a debate, my friends. I think everybody watched it. Not as many people as predicted. I think I heard 84 million, but they were hoping or predicting about 100.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, that got me thinking about live television and how we just don't do that. No one watches it live. People, in fact, just say, I'm going to go home and watch it.
Right. Yeah, but everybody.
I DVR'd it.
Yeah, right. But not this. No, everybody's locked in.
The last time I think I I'm trying to think of when people crowded around televisions outside of sports. And I think it was like when Nick Wallenda walked on the tightrope across the Grand Canyon and everyone's like, I would like to see what in the world this man is doing.
Everyone wanted to see him die. That was basically it.
And then when he did it out here across the river, I was underneath him with a camera.
Oh, were you really? Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to fire this camera either way.
Yep.
Whatever happens.
Good luck, sir.
And then later, I interviewed him later with Andrea Darlis on WGN. And we talked. I told him I was like, I was right below you, really hoping you did not fall down for many reasons, selfish and otherwise. But nonetheless, so it was that one. And then when Felix Baumgartner jumped from space. Remember that whole thing?
That was really cool. Yeah,
that was super cool. And I was driving. And when that, I was like, oh, I'm not going to get to the place in time. I'm going to just pull over and watch this on my phone.
Because
it was just so bizarre. But outside of that, we don't watch a lot of live things.
No, definitely not. You don't have that sort of, like when people would watch the season, even like series finales.
Yeah.
Like everyone, like, I don't, MASH ended.
Right.
And like all these things that were kind of like these emotional journeys. But
yeah,
even that, people are like, no spoilers. I got to watch it later.
Yeah.
So not, yeah.
And I think, so it's like sports and award shows. That's the only thing we really watch live.
Yeah. Right.
But we were on it for the debate and Twitter was on fire.
Oh, big time.
Whoa. Yeah.
And that's added so much to the experience, I think. I mean, some people don't like it, I guess, but I love it. I think it just, you see people and they're making great jokes and they're making sometimes very insightful points about what's happening, or they're noticing something nobody else notices.
Right, right.
Like,
and the signal boost goes really fast.
Yeah.
You know, somebody says something insightful or interesting or very funny, and a lot of people will retweet them really quickly and that will get boosted. For better or worse, sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes worse.
And that doesn't work on Facebook because our Facebook feeds are so curated to agree with us.
Yeah.
We tend to befriend people that think what we think.
Sure, you're in a bubble.
Yeah, which is why, you know, it pains me when I see people saying, I'm going to unfriend everybody today.
Yeah.
Like, let it be. I mean, I think by doing that, we're contributing to the problem of a total lack of discourse. We can't do it. We can't do it. We've totally screwed up. And we've gotten to where we can't talk to each other about anything without screaming.
Yeah, if you tailor everything to your specific needs and beliefs, what are you getting? I mean, you're getting nothing. You're getting
a big old echo chamber.
Right, exactly.
You're getting yes men and women.
Yeah, and I have some... I mean, I'll mute people on Twitter who are abusive or obnoxious, that sort of thing. That's different than a difference of opinion. But there's lots of people on Twitter who... you know, engage with me or I engage with them and we don't agree, but, you know, we're nice. Or, you know, Facebook, probably Facebook more so even because they're, you know, I have friends who have different viewpoints on different things and I'm happy to hear that and I want to hear that. But to just get, if it's everybody's just sitting there nodding their head in agreement, like that's not any fun.
And I think what's interesting about Facebook too is sometimes the meanest, really, sometimes the meanest can come from really close friends or relatives that like want you to think differently. Like, I'm surprised you would think that way.
Yeah,
I'm shocked you would think that. And they'll say that to you. And you're like, okay, everyone can hear you.
Exactly. They get really passionate about things.
And just lately I've noticed people like independent bloggers have been pitching me individual posts. But without, it's unclear what they want. They're just kind of, I think they have a lack of understanding about how media works and where we find stories or what it even means to report something. And so there was been several in the last couple of weeks that have like pitched me a particular blog post. Most of them end with Blogspot, right?
Right.
And which is fine. You don't necessarily have to buy your domain, but nonetheless, have pitched me a blog post and then said, oh, typical liberal media, you're not going to pick this up and run it. I'm like, first of all, nobody does that. That's
right.
Not a
That's
thing.
That's not how it works.
That's not how it works. I personally am not like McClatchy News Service.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I don't just go like, here, fellas, here's a story. Also, and I was trying to explain to one blogger in particular, he was reporting about, and I'm going to air quote reporting, he wrote a blog post about something that happened in the Middle East, and he said, you know, the mainstream media is ignoring this. And I Googled exactly what he was talking about and pulled up. I was like, well, here's the Washington Post coverage of it. Here's New York Times. Here's this. I said, and further, he goes, well, mine's more insightful. And I said, well, so you're there?
Mm-hmm.
Is it what you're doing? And he was like, no, I'm reporting on it. I'm like, right, okay. But you're not there. So in fact, you are reporting on reporting. And then it kind of broke down quickly. And he said, I'm just being a gatekeeper.
Yeah, this is one of the big problems with the way that the media has been delegitimized by people, including Donald Trump and others
with no understanding of it.
Right. And for that matter, Hillary Clinton's side isn't exactly polite about the media either.
Yeah.
And the problem is that would you hire an electrician to come in and fix your plumbing? Or, you know what I mean? Like, nobody respects the fact that journalists do actually have training and do actually know what they're doing.
Right.
So when you lose that respect, basically everybody's like a journalist is anybody can do that. Anybody can be it. And so if somebody thinks that way, then there's no respect and there's no understanding of why what person A, who has no journalism training, is saying might be factually incorrect or not as important as they think it is or whatever. So there's just absolutely no legitimacy in so many people's minds to what the media does, that they just want the media to do what they want it to do.
Yeah.
And anything beyond that is bias or it's liberal crap or whatever.
Frankly, my skin crawls every time I hear someone say the media.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There was a really good piece in the Washington Post this past week where somebody said, please stop calling it the media, because that's really not accurate
at all.
It's
not accurate. And frankly, you cannot say that word without including social media in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then
yeah.
It's on everybody.
Right, exactly.
Really.
Yeah, everybody with a damn camera thinks that they're a journalist now. And
it's
not true. I mean, there's a lot of good that comes from the way it's been democratized.
Sure,
absolutely. And I respect that. But I've done this for 20 years.
Right.
And I know a little bit about what I'm doing, at least. And I know a little bit about news judgment and a little bit about how to tell when something's accurate or not accurate or trustworthy or not trustworthy. And people should have a little respect for that. Just in the same way, like I said, you know, if the electrician comes to my house and says there's something wrong with the wiring here, I'm probably not going to say, are you sure? Like, because to me that looks like blah, 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 when I don't know the first thing about electricity.
Well, we let passion be credibility.
Mm-hmm, right.
And you know, there's an example we use a lot when I am wearing my op-ed project hat, and that's we talk about passion as credibility. And it's like, if someone walked in, you're going to have heart surgery tomorrow. And I was like, I love hearts. I've been drawing hearts since I was 16. And I can't wait to crack your chest open and get in there and see your heart. Like, no, you want to know, what training do I have? How many people have died on my watch? You know, you want to know those kind of details that are irrefutable, concrete things that give me the credibility to be your heart surgeon, not passion about it.
Right.
And that's what we see from a lot of bloggers. And I also think people don't have an understanding of just how much we do disclose to one another in a newsroom, mm-hmm. and how much we do talk about bias to each other.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't think that people understand that. We recognize we're human beings, so therefore we're constantly telling editors, hey, I have this conflict, or do you think this would be seen as a conflict? Do you think that, you know, hey, I'm not sure I should be covering this because of this? I just don't think people understand that. I think even very, very smart people sometimes believe that we are swayed in coverage. We are influenced, or you know, I've told my own parents. Like, at no point did anybody from the Obama administration ever tell me what to write.
Right. Yeah,
just FYI.
Yeah. No. An enormous number of people think we get like talking points every morning email from the administration, and they don't think. I mean, that's not like a joke. I mean, they really believe that, and. What I just don't know. It's hard to argue against when somebody's that set in their beliefs. It's hard to argue against it. But I mean, I'm a columnist. I can say technically whatever I want, And I still think about these things. You know, when I'm writing something and I still talk to my editor, I'm like, wait, am I being unfair here? Is this an, even though technically if I wanted to, I could be. But, you know, so I think that's built into most journalists. Now, are there mistakes? Absolutely. Are there instances where publications or broadcast media people have been swayed? Of course, you know, these things happen and there's mistakes in absolutely every profession on earth. So,
and I think where we get into trouble is a lot of times we're paired with editors who get us and who are like us. And so sometimes that person can't necessarily see your bias or your blind spot or your, you know, something like that. I think that's where we get into trouble and make like total screw ups and headlines and things like that. And why newsroom diversity is so important. So you have somebody with a vastly different point of view who is back checking you going like, well, you know, the way you say that is not quite even handed. You should say it this way.
Oh, yeah, that's hugely important. And yeah, I mean, there's been times when I've written about issues relating to the African-American community and I've been saying something that I'm not 100% sure I'm where I'm at on, if I'm a good footing here or what have you. And so I've run it by a colleague who's African-American and said, hey, am I being offensive? Or if it's something about a women's issue, then I run it by a female colleague and say, hey, I want to make sure that this doesn't sound like I'm being sexist somehow or that I'm doing something, you know, and that the value in having those different voices around you is immense. And we need more of them because there's definitely not anywhere near enough.
Agreed. So agreed. Well, speaking of sexism, let's take that segue and talk about the debate. So
I promised I was going to interrupt you more, but I haven't done enough. I haven't done enough of it yet. I'll try to get better about that the rest of the way.
51 times he interrupted her during that debate. But before we even get to that, I just want to say there were so many people both in support of her and not in support of her, mostly male, but not entirely, who criticized every damn face she made. Leading me to believe there is absolutely no face Hillary Clinton can make that will possibly please anyone. And further, it is don't tell me men and women are judged by the same standards.
God. Yeah, no, she both smiled too much and smiled not enough and smiled not middle of the road enough.
So,
all at the same time. No, it's insane. I mean, he's there slugging back water. He's got the sniffles, which if she had had them, they would have said she has, you know, like typhoid fever or something like that. And the different ways that it's judged are striking to me, and it's becoming more apparent as this campaign moves along to me, the amount to which the differences in the way they're both being judged is happening.
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen this thrown around on social media a little bit, but at the end of the day, we have this guy has gotten pass after pass on, and I think it came up again because he brought Jennifer Flowers to the debate, right?
Yeah. But no, I don't think she actually came.
He invited her. That's what I meant.
Yeah, he said he was going to invite her just as a jab, basically, at the Clintons.
And so here, you know, on some level, like Hillary has to overcome that happened to her in her marriage, that she didn't do it. It was done to her. And yet he, you know, nobody is bitching left or right at all about his women and his marriages. And,
exactly.
Which is fine. Like, it's okay. It's perfectly okay to be married more than once. That's perfectly fine. That's not an issue. It's that we're holding her personal life to a standard for a choice she didn't even make. Her spouse made.
Right. This is the point where I'm in such a twister of bizarreness that I don't even know what to do with myself.
But I'm writing that down. Twister of bizarreness.
One of his sons, I think it was Eric Trump, the vampire, looked fresh off his latest vampire film, said today that he couldn't believe the courage his father showed by not bringing up Bill Clinton's affairs during the debate. The courage that his father showed by refraining from talking about how his opponent's husband cheated on her, when in fact his father cheated on his mother and then married his mistress. I mean, come on. Like, what is this? It's absolutely, but it's like we're living in a alternate reality. It's just absolutely bizarre. But, you know, said that with like such
He meant it.
Right, yeah.
I mean, damn it.
I've never seen him. And he said, I'll remember that for the rest of my life, how brave he was. And I'm like, what? The guy, he took 4 deferments from Vietnam. So come on. Let's not talk bravery with this fella.
What on earth? That's good. That's rich right there. That is some tone deafness of epic next level tone deaf proportions right there.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think it's absurd to bring up, you know, Bill Clinton's affair, whatever. But if you think that that's fair game, then your own crap is fair game.
Totally.
You know, and boy, is there a lot there, too. So, you know, I don't know if that's really the swamp you want to wade into.
I admire his courage. What? Yes. What courage?
Hero.
Dad, you're my hero for not being a douche.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You refrained for like a minute from being a complete dick.
I like the immediately, you know, Trump. Well, let's back up, actually.
Sure.
Before we get to the
so
aftermath.
So much.
I know that's a problem. We need hours to go through all this. So, you know, it started out, I think he was kind of, I mean, the sniffling was weird, and I think it was distracting because a lot of people went to cocaine accusations quickly and started, I can't remember who it was, but even some celebrities were even saying, like, please blow your damn nose. And people were tweeting.
Oh, yeah. It was very noticeable.
It was. And it was irritating. It was annoying. Mm-hmm. Also annoying was his constantly interrupting her 51 times through the course of the debate. But it seemed like he kind of came in kind of chill. Mm-hmm. He didn't seem as wound up as usual.
Right. Oh.
Which I think that's we were all kind of looking for. You know, we figured this guy would come in looking for like a knife fight. And she just wants to have like friendly debate here, you know. I thought he completely unraveled by the end.
Oh my God! Yeah, it was. You could just see it happening, little by little. But you're right, and I think most people agreed that the first 15 minutes, 20 minutes or so of the debate, he actually seemed, by his standards, relatively reasonable.
Yeah.
And he was making some points about trade and things like that that a lot of people agree on, and that are not by any means like loony concepts.
Yeah, and
all.
I mean, people going like, finally, some real issues. He's finally telling us his position on things.
And he even got her on a few good points about, whereas, you know, the TPP, she, you know, sort of was for it and then said she opposed it. She flip-flopped on that. That's absolutely true. And he came after her on that. And, you know, these are good points and they're things that are worth being examined. So it's sort of like you had an actual debate going briefly, aside from the sniffles and the water gulping that he was doing, but
alleged water. No, alleged. Just kidding.
Well, no, I actually I tweeted something about the water, and somebody responded and said she's drinking just as much. They're just not showing it.
Oh,
and
my
I said,
God.
It's a split screen. I was like, what do you mean they're not showing it? She's on the screen the whole time. What has she got? Like a secret straw or something?
Oh my God, people are so ready to
it's
pounce.
Like, yeah, it's Insta conspiracy theories. They don't even wait. They just happen like out of thin air. But anyway, yeah, no. So it seemed pretty normal, but then, like you said, I mean, he just started. I don't know if he got bored or if it was her little. I mean, she was doing a good job of hitting him where it hurts,
business.
He's not as rich as maybe his taxes,
What he pins his self-esteem on. It really seems like.
Oh yeah.
Even when she brought up Charleston, right? Like she starts bringing up cities and I'm sorry, not Charleston, Charlotte. Sorry.
Yeah, Charlotte.
She. When she said that, you know, her tone got somber. She really was speaking from a more emotional place. And he said, Charlotte, comma, where I have many investments.
Yeah, where I have many properties. He said that a couple times.
Yeah, like what? We're talking about human beings losing their lives right now. If you could just chill with your condo developments, that'd be great.
Yes, really worried how this is going to impact my bottom line here.
Who's going to buy my condos?
Right.
Yeah, I thought like his whole thing is just pinned on stuff like that. So watching him flail towards the end, I was like, what's happening?
Yeah, and when he got into she brought up the Miss Universe comments, the body shaming stuff. As well as other comments he's made, like about Rosie O'Donnell, and you know the Rosie O'Donnell thing, he actually references, and he says she had it coming.
How dare she
right,
be female?
Yeah, and it was. I mean, look, it's just nobody has that coming. You know, he called her a fat slob. He called various other things. And I was thinking for a second there. I'm like, we have a presidential candidate who is defending calling a woman a fat slob.
Right.
And I don't understand that. And the thing that, I mean, I don't see how I try to think about it from other people's standpoints. Sure. And not that I don't mean to sound like I'm some great, virtuous human being or whatever, but I watched that and was offended by the tone that he was taking, both with her and, you know, with other women that were being talked about. That does not resonate with me. That seems very rude. It's sending a bad message, I think. But I tried to think about, how about a woman who's watching it?
Yeah.
You know, where not only is this, does she probably recognize this kind of behavior from experiences in the workplace or whatever, but, you know, she's also thinking about her, you know, her daughters, if she has them, or, you know, various other things. And then I have boys. I don't have a daughter, but I thought about a father with a daughter, and I'm like, how is anybody okay with this? Okay, this is just, I mean, the interrupting thing is like, you know, that's sexism 101. I mean, that's just like the basic jerk guy thing to do to a woman. And the stuff at the beginning where he's like, can I call you secretary? Is that, you know, I want you to be happy. Yeah, babe. Yeah. And it's like, oh, come on. I mean, you just sound like a lunkhead. And so, you know, that stuff was so on the surface, so right on the surface. And I'd be curious of your take too on this, but I mean, I just don't see how that doesn't come across horribly bad for a lot of people.
Oh yeah. Well, Heidi Stevens just wrote about this the Tribune about, okay, now that he's bringing up women's bodies and putting them in this pass-fail category of acceptable or disgusting, how do we talk to our daughters about this? Because now we need to. Urgently, we have to talk about this. I thought it was a really thoughtful piece that she wrote.
Yeah, she's fantastic. And I agree, that was very good. And it's a very real question. I mean, this is, you know, this isn't some bozo on a television show. This is someone who could legitimately has a chance of becoming president of the United States. And what kind of a message does that send to young girls? What does it send to all women? What does it send to men? Does it say this is okay to do this? This is cool to do this? You become powerful if you're like this, if you sort of talk down to women and you think it's fine to just talk over them and be rude. I mean, you know, just it's a lot of messages that are just bad. I don't want my boys hearing that or ever thinking that's okay.
Oh my God, if the Hupke boys grew up to be like that.
Yes.
Oh man.
Yes, forget about it. Trust me, they won't.
They will not. There's no way that they will. Well, he's also referred to a lawyer who had to pump breast milk as disgusting. Mm-hmm. He is referred to, you know, he also said that thing about the 400 pounds. He's like rattling off people.
I'm
like, what are you talking about? First of all, let's go there for a minute, because he kept saying the cyber. That was driving me crazy. I was like, that's not a place. Yeah. That's not a real thing. Stop saying the cyber. Yeah. My 10-year-old son, he's very good with the cyber, with
so
computers.
Good.
What?
He's the best, really.
What are you saying?
He's always doing the cyber.
Are you making him like the Secretary of Technology? What's happening right now, 10-year-olds? Like,
we've got to get control of the cyber.
Yeah, the cyber. And then he said it again about something else. It wasn't, let's see, he kept saying the cyber. And then a little bit after that, it was like another thing that was just like, that's not a the.
Right, yeah. You're making things up now. These are not.
Making some crap up. So the cyber was weird, because that tells me you have no legitimate understanding of actual technology and the situation we're in. Frankly, I'm going to look to this next president to work on some of the absolute lawlessness that is facing technology right now.
Yeah.
We have, our use is way out ahead of where the law is. It is the wild, wild west. We're able to do things online that if we were to do or say to someone on the street, we would be arrested in a mm-hmm. minute. But we're able to do them online with relatively few consequences. And I'm going to push very hard for, you know, that's a big, you know, big project and big passion of mine, to make public forums online safe for anyone to participate in, and to participate with a relative expectation of safety.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, everyone didn't have to sit around and be kumbaya, but we do have to just, we can't chase each other off the internet. We can't punish women by ruining their lives and threatening them and doing awful things. And I plan on making a lot of noise about it to whoever is the next president. And that tells me if he is elected, he's not going to give a damn.
No.
He's not going to do anything. He's going to say, the cyber.
It's fine.
Change your password or whatever.
Yeah.
Get my 10-year-old. He's the smartest kid. He's very smart. The smartest. What?
The cyber.
That was killing me. I yelled at my television so much that my neighbor laughed at one point. And at one point, I could hear them laughing through the walls, and he was like, I hear you, man. Like, yes. It was like the neighbor in Office Space.
I share your pain.
It was totally that moment. We were just like yelling through the living room wall. So that was a thing. So there was that part. I mean, the interrupting was weird, but also we have to hold Lester Holt to that.
Yeah, I don't know why he didn't stop and say, hey, whoa, you can't do that. You can talk during your time. This is how a debate works. You're being an idiot. I mean, that was really, aside from the, like I said, the sexism aspect of that, where it was just rude, I also wanted to say, well, this is decorum-wise.
Yeah.
It's a debate. I mean, it's a presidential debate, much even more so. So this, you should be behaving and acting nice. And if you want to roll your eyes or whatever here and there, that's up to you. But you can't say, no, false.
Oh.
You know, like leaning in, nope.
You know what? I finished that and just felt, I felt really bad for Melania. Like, oh, and you know, like, God, you got to argue with that man.
I have to believe she just doesn't. I mean, she just, whatever, you know, lets it go. See
guess.
How you argue with that. I mean,
can you imagine
getting
into like a household argument about, you know, doing the dishes or whoever's turn is to do laundry or whatever the hell you fight about when you allegedly have millions of dollars? Like, imagine of just the like, hey, you know, you aren't respecting my feelings. What did you mean by that? Or I told you not to leave the toilet seat up or whatever they're fighting about. Wrong, false, wrong, wrong.
Lies.
Oh, my God.
Lies.
Seriously, shut up right now.
the worst.
The worst. Like, the most childish form. I was texting with some friends during that, and I told one of them, I was like, oh, my gosh, his style of arguing is my least favorite style of arguing. Hey, there's a text message right now.
Dang. Imagine playing board games with him.
No.
A family game night.
No. Game night at the Trump house. Yes. Oh, my God. No, I will not pass go.
Yeah. Dad, you landed on Boardwalk. Didn't.
No, I didn't. This game is the worst game.
Yes.
I'm huge. I am hugely successful without this game.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Totally. Board game night at the Trump house would be the worst. So he interrupted her. But then Lester Holt interrupted her, too, like 19 times or something like that. And the only one that really sticks out that was appropriate was when he cut them both off and said, Mr. Trump, Secretary Clinton, it's her 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only time.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't understand that either. I mean, he was kind of, he was not there, it seemed like, for a large part of it. And then many of the times when he was there, he was cutting things off where it seemed like it would have been better to keep it going in general.
I liked Lester, start that clock over or whatever she said.
Yeah, yeah. Ring that baby up again. The whole thing was odd because I felt like he was under a lot of pressure going into it. I understood that. And there was the debate over whether he should fact check or not and all this sort of stuff. But I think if you're not going to fact check, which he did a little bit of, but not extensively, then your job is to maintain the rules. And he wasn't doing that. And she was going over time, too. I mean, they both were. So, you know, I just feel like early on he could have been a little bit more of a jerk about it, Frank. You know, basically just sort of dropped the hammer and said, okay, look, time's up, ding.
Yeah, here's
what we're
doing.
Moving on. And no, you don't interrupt and whatever. And then he could have maybe gotten them both, you know, contained. Not that, I mean, she wasn't doing all the interrupting, obviously, but she, you know, she went over time, but so was he and on. Some people were arguing, well, he just wanted to kind of let it flow. And I'm like, I don't know if that's really what you need to
He's not
be
the
doing.
MC.
Right, yeah. I mean, maybe to a degree you let that flow, but you have to have some kind of pacing and some kind of, you know, standard so that one's not talking over the other and interrupting and running way over the allotted time.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if he were on the air with two guests, he knows you have to hit commercial at this point, you have to do this. You're not just gonna like, meh, we'll get to commercial whenever, we're just gonna run. No, you're there to facilitate the conversation and to run that show. That said, I want to do that at some point in my life. I want to moderate a presidential debate. I think that would be such a cool gig.
That would be fun.
And I'm not saying it would be easy.
Oh, no.
I would be nervous as hell going in that, like, holy crap, everyone's looking at me to not be a dumbass right now. Okay, game on. It would be hard to do, and it would be easy to be nervous about that. So I give him some slack there, but also, like, come on.
Yeah, again, I think, because I feel like the rule, you know, enforcing the rules is kind of the most. That's
easy.
The very least that you can do. And I didn't, I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's incredibly hard, easy for me to say, hey, why didn't you do that? I mean, everybody, and he also, I'm sure, knew that afterwards everybody was going to gripe about him.
Yeah.
You know, and they did. But I think it's a sort of a no-win situation. Yeah. But I do think that I would have liked to see a little bit more maintaining of some sort of standards in terms of what they were doing.
And I liked how The Onion had a story up before the debate was even over, a thing about him leaving, like people were out looking for him.
That's what it felt like sometimes.
Middle of the debate. It was up. It was like searches on for Lester Holt missing in action or whatever. It's like he was out. He was like, I'm done here.
Yeah,
I'm out.
Yeah, he really did sort of space out for
a while. So, I mean, I can't help but think that if she would have interrupted Trump that many times, oh, my God, she would be roasted right now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. People would be all up on her about, oh, what a bitch. Oh, what a terrible person. Look at all these horrible things.
Not ladylike at all.
That's not ladylike. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and well, look at all of, and I don't like to play this, you know, what if game too much, but
sure.
But I do think it's relevant in this case that if she had been drinking water, then she would have had pancreatic cancer or something.
Right.
That would have been the headline. If she had been coughing, she would have been, you know, even closer to death than people already claim she is.
Mm-hmm.
The interrupting absolutely would have seemed too brusque. You know, people would have been all over how rude, how blah, blah, blah. They wouldn't let him talk and yada, yada, yada. So, again, those are the things that the difference in the way they were judged is ridiculous, I think, and the standards that they're held to, especially the coughing or the sniffling thing was hilarious, given that they went into this
right.
with you know, all of these ridiculous health rumors about her, and then he's the one who's coughing and, you know, all this stuff. And also, not for nothing, you know, she just got over pneumonia,
right?
And she stood up,
and she's like,
stood up there
I'm
for
fine.
90 minutes and
game on, fools,
didn't
let's
take
do
a
this.
Sip of water, didn't
nothing.
Do anything. You know, I was like, good Lord, we should
And seemed relaxed.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Didn't seem like her energy was low or anything mm-mm. like that, where she did right after the New York City explosion just a mm-hmm. week or two ago. She did seem, when she responded to that news that night, she seemed very low energy. But, like,
yeah.
You got pneumonia. You're allowed to be a little bit low energy.
Yeah, yeah. The whole thing, I'm not you know, praising her for the greatest debate showing ever or anything like that. But, given the circumstances that were going on the way into that. Speaking of conspiracy theories, my favorite thing I saw, because she did that really funny little shoulder wiggle or shimmy or whatever they called it after he said that basically that she said it was, why don't you just blame me for everything that's ever happened? And she had that little, and it was great. I thought that was actually it was a very human mm-hmm. moment, which from her, you don't always see a lot of that sometimes since she is very careful as far as politicians go. But she did that little shimmy, and then I think it was Breitbart had a headline about, didn't it seem like that shimmy went on just a little too long? Like there was a
oh my God,
like that must have been a tremor.
Oh my God, be serious, people.
There is no serious. It's all
somebody's made like a little video. It's like her doing it, and then Shaquille O'Neal, and then a cat like wiggling its butt,
that.
Ready to pounce.
Yeah, that
it's
was
like
really
the
funny.
Super shake video.
Yeah,
a tremor. Come on, be serious.
Yes, it's the Parkinson's again.
Oh God, yeah, there's that. See if she. Oh my God, it's like this expectation of fragility.
Mm-hmm, right.
That like we're these delicate little creatures. And are you sure you don't need to go get a policeman or your father to help you run for president there, little girl? Like, give me a break. That's so ridiculous. So also, I was cringing every time he said Chicago. And he did it like 9 times in a row, really fast, talking about Chicago and throwing out a bunch of numbers and criticizing what I think is such a magnificent city that I've chosen to live here twice.
Right. Yeah.
I moved here. I was not born here. I chose it as an adult. I went away for a little project and I came right back. I could have gone anywhere. I came right back to this city.
Yeah.
So I don't like people talking smack about this city because it is my chosen home and it is a fine city. It is one of the finest cities in the world. And just the way he was talking about Chicago made my skin crawl.
Yeah. As if everything is horrible. We are living in a dystopian hellscape here where you can't walk down the street. First of all, I can walk down any street in all of Chicago and not get shot. Thank you very much. And if you'd like to come walk with me sometime, I'd be happy to do that.
Yeah, let's do it.
But, you know, it's so ridiculous. And not that there aren't massive problems happening that need to be dealt with. I mean, that, of course. But the idea of, first of all, using that for some sort of perverse political gain. I mean, what he's really doing is trying to make white people feel okay about him and pretending he has concern for these situations. He has no understanding as nor do most people nationally, about what is actually happening in Chicago, why it's happening, why you don't send in the National Guard to fix everything, why, you know, this is a complex problem developed over decades,
yeah,
you know, that needs to be addressed in multiple different ways and blah, blah, blah. So it's just, I mean, he's spouting this stuff solely to scare people.
Absolutely.
So that he can say the words law and order, which people...
And stop and frisk.
Right, stop and frisk is absolutely bonkers.
Oh, my God. When he said, like, there was noise throughout my building. I could hear all of my neighbors, all of us just were like, whoa, when he said that. Like,
yeah.
What are you saying right now?
Yeah, and he even talks about one of the, you know, and there was a moment of agreement, I believe, between them where they talked about the need for, you know, a better relationship between the community and the police, and stop and frisk is not going to do that.
That ain't do it.
No, that's
that going to
cause
a
lot of problems, and it's not, and it'll cause a lot of problems while not doing anything positive. I mean, that's been studied so carefully since stop and frisk. As stop and frisk has declined in New York City dramatically, crime has continued to decline in New York City. So there has not been any identification of a causal relationship between stop and frisk and crime reduction. It just does not work. And in the process, you cause all kinds of problems. And, you know, also the issue of whether it's constitutional or not remains up there. So I think that the whole idea, and I agree with you completely, I mean, you know, he keeps targeting Chicago. Why? Because our numbers are high right now, and it is a problem. But he keeps using it as if to say, not only is Chicago like this, the whole country is like
right.
this. The whole country is on fire. And what he's saying with a wink and a nod to his certain white supporters is that aren't these black people a problem and brown people a problem and stuff like that. And what he's trying to communicate to some of the less extreme white people is I care, so I'm not actually racist like they say I am. I mean, it's a very, very transparent
Absolutely.
What he's doing. I mean, he has support of somewhere between like 1-3% of African-American voters in this country. He is not going to win the black vote. He knows that. So everything,
he's not saying that.
Right, of course not. But
he's
everything,
saying very confidently.
But everything he's doing is targeted at making white people feel a little bit better about him. So
yeah.
that maybe they'll be like, well, I don't think he's as, you know, as bad on those issues as they say he is. And,
yeah.
You know, so, and that just disgusts me in and of itself. But again, the Chicago thing, it completely misrepresents the city at large. And it, you know, again, people in the communities where this violence is happening have been used plenty at this point for political reasons.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem. And so having a presidential candidate use them for political reasons isn't doing anybody any good.
Not at all. Not at all. And he, first of all, don't say Chicago. That's A. Start there. Say it right.
Yes.
Second of all, you've totally hit the nail on the head. It's a strange way. I mean, this is like bigger conversation we should save for the next show here. But really, it's like there when we say racist, we think about like a white supremacist organization or something, right? We think mm-hmm. of like white power groups. There is a wide swath of people who do not believe they are racist because they have not like burned a cross on someone's yard, but in fact are magnificently racist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And say unbelievable things so casually. And I think it's so important to like speak up and say things when you hear casual racism like that. Cause I think it's in some ways a bit more dangerous. It's not as overt. It's not as like, you know, it's not like a KKK rally kind of overt and that kind of danger, but there's a whole other, like it feeds a systemic racism that's so dangerous and so terrifying. And the things I hear people say just blow my mind sometimes. I heard someone, like this was said to my face by a person who I think is moral and intelligent. This person said, it was about some census demographic data. That was the topic at hand. And this person said to me, I just wonder when they take over, meaning when white people are no longer mm-hmm. the majority,
yeah.
how we are going to be treated. I can't think it will be good. And I just like stared like, what in the hell just happened right now? Because, and I was like, well, let's, okay. And I didn't, you know, this is someone I respect and know. And so I couldn't be like, well, you're a crazy person. You know, I had to, I want to facilitate dialogue here. And so I said, well, you know, let's start with just the term they. Like, let's just start with maybe saying all human beings have hearts and blood and wishes and dreams.
Those people.
Right. And I said, and further, like, what are you really getting at? Are you, because it sounds like on some level you perhaps are confessing to me that you do not treat all people equally, therefore you don't have an expectation of equality.
Right.
And that was like, oh my God, there's no talking to you. I got to go.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Fine. Whatever.
You're just being, yeah. See, then that's where they say, oh, they scream political correctness and blah, blah, blah. Oh, you can't talk about these things. Well, it's like, yeah, no, you can talk about them, but you got to know what you're talking about. I mean, there's a big difference between talking about things from a place of understanding things and then just talking about things because you want to hear yourself speak.
I have no patience for that. Like, oh, I'm sick of this political correctness.
Yeah.
I have no patience for that. I really don't. Like, that makes my blood just boil, because what you are really saying is I need a convenient for me way to be hateful to other human beings.
Yeah.
That's really all it is. People from the GOP have even said that. There was a guy on Meet the Press this past weekend that even said, I'm in an awkward position because I can't support my own party's candidate, and I'm fed up with this idea of political correctness, which is really just a thinly veiled way to be completely racist and immoral.
Right.
I'm like, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Finally, someone is making some damn sense around here.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a browser plugin that you can put in, I think, in Google Chrome that makes every instance of politically correct crap appear in your browser as treating other human beings with respect. And it's magical.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, there are examples of political correctness that go too far. I do agree with that. And there are times where that thinking can wind up limiting the way people are able to speak about things. And that's a problem, legitimately, when it appears. But what quote-unquote political correctness is being... What you're talking about when politicians and Donald Trump and other people bring that up... It means I'm not allowed to. I mean, that's not on a super specific level. That's basically saying, like, I'm not allowed to say how frustrated I am that these Mexican people have taken my job.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's really what it is. I mean, and so that is, and there, and so what you're doing by screaming political correctness is doing exactly the thing that you are kind of protesting against, which is you're limiting conversation. You're saying, like, I can't talk about the. It just makes makes absolutely no sense, and it is a based in fear and an unwillingness to understand.
Right.
And I would say, if you want to know about violence in Chicago, come on, I'll go introduce you to some people on the west side and we can walk around a little bit and talk to some people, and then you'll have a better understanding, and no, you won't get shot in the process. If you think you're going to get shot, if you're one of these people who's like, oh, I never drive through the west side, I'll get shot, and they just go around some circuitous route, you don't care. You don't care, and you don't want to understand. And that doesn't make me better than you. It just means that I've experienced some things, and I have an understanding of it, and I feel like I can talk about it like an intelligent human being, as opposed to somebody who's letting his or her bias, you know, kind of creep in.
Absolutely.
Stuff. So.
And we, I mean, there's this narrative, like, the entire south and west side of this marvelous city is all on fire.
No, it's garbage. I mean, that's absolutely garbage.
Completely false.
Yeah. No, it is. I mean, there are wonderful people everywhere in the city.
And there are douchebags all over the city.
Yeah, no kidding. You know? I mean, believe me, there's douchebags in the suburbs also.
Right.
Let me tell you. I've been to places in the suburbs that are a hell of a lot scarier to me than places, you know, in the middle of nowhere. And I'm, you know,
There are beautiful things happening all around the city.
Yes.
And there are concerned and committed and intelligent citizens doing good work all over the city. And I really resent someone not from here, not living here, just because he's got a building that looks like a syringe sticking up in our skyline, telling us otherwise. I really resent that, and I really think that's inaccurate, and that's awful. And speaking of inaccurate and awful, I don't know if you saw this, but Sean Hannity, on the way out of this debate, not only did Trump talk about his defective microphone and hypothesize that perhaps it was, you know, a big conspiracy and the person operating sound should not be paid, which is absurd.
He loves not paying people.
But but Sean Hannity referred to, I put this up on Facebook, but he referred to overpaid media.
Yeah, I
did
saw
you
that.
See that?
Yeah, the like expensive wine drinking,
the
overpaid
steakhouses, the chauffeur-driven limousines, and the lifestyle for expensive wine.
Yeah. And his salary is...
$29 million in 2015.
Exactly.
And he there's a note in the story that I shared on Facebook. Towards the end, he was at a Ruth's Chris steakhouse, which he mentions a lot on the air.
Mm-hmm.
He was there with the Duck Dynasty people.
No, good people.
About $5,000 bill. $5,000. You rack up a $5,000 bill, even at Ruth's Chris, you are doing some damage.
Yeah.
I think we know who's all about the expensive wine here if you've got a $5,000 bill.
That'll buy a lot of ducks.
That'll buy a lot of ducks and a lot of steak and a lot of limos. But apparently he had super alligator arms when the bill came.
Oh, really?
And the Duck Dynasty guy got it. Which I love.
That's fantastic.
Like, you've got $29 million.
Yeah.
I don't even make a fraction of what you make, guy, and you're going to be all alligator arms about the bill.
He's the worst. He is absolutely just garbage. I can't stand him, and I don't say that easily about many people, but he just is he's something. And, I mean, the gall of making a comment like that, you know.
Yeah.
When that's... yeah.
Like, dude, you started in this business the same as all of us did. Like, come on.
Yeah.
We all know, like... nobody gets into journalism to get rich.
Well, and honestly, it's people like him. You know, I always wonder how much of this is shtick for some of these guys.
Yeah.
You know, Limbaugh and him and, you know, Michael Savage. I don't know if you've ever listened to him. He's a real far right. And I wonder, I don't know. I wonder, because you listen to that stuff, and obviously, look, I'm coming from the other side of the ideological fence, so it's going to be nonsense. A lot of it's crap to me, and I realize that. But even trying to be somewhat objective, you listen and you're like, you don't believe that half the stuff coming out of your mouth. Come on. I mean, that's just ridiculous what you're saying.
Yeah.
And you know, the defending things that just are indefensible and trying to make up, you know, Hannity did the knockout game forever, which was because like one black kid somewhere went up to a white dude and punched him while other kids were videotaping it. And so that became like a national thing. And so all the white people listening to Hannity's show were like, oh my God, it's the knockout game. We're going to get it.
God.
And it's like, oh, come on. I mean, there was like, and all of these law enforcement people are coming out saying this is not a trend and nothing happened. But he's like, well, you know, he finds like the one sheriff that'll describe it as a thing. And I'm like, you know what? Think about how do you look at yourself? Like you're hurting society. You're
See, that's the thing, and like
society.
that's the team where we hear bitching the most about quote the media.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have got to get rid of cable news stuff.
Yeah,
that is ruining everyone's life.
Yeah,
it is. I mean, I made the mistake of like I watched the Ferguson protests on Fox News with relatives with good intentions, and I was trying to like I was feeling a little bold that night and tried to explain conjecture to them,
mm-hmm.
and I almost lost my entire family for a year because they were just like, pushing an agenda. I was like, no, I'm trying to explain to you that, you know, and what it was like Shepard Smith was staying there, who I think for the most part is fairly reasonable. He was looking at a crowd shot, and there were three people in the crowd shot holding the same sign. It was like a pre-printed sign.
Mm-hmm.
And he circled them on the screen and said, this is proof that they were going to protest tonight no matter what. They just want to make noise on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like nodding in the room. And I was like, hold up. Anybody who's ever covered a protest or participated in one knows that organizations have signs and they hand them out.
Yeah, sure.
This is a sign of nothing. Like, let's talk about conjecture. And there was like, meh. Anyway.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Well, Rex Hupke, let's go get in our expensive limos with our expensive wine and our expensive steakhouses, because that's what we do here in the media.
Yes, I need to. I'm going to call my robot butler, make sure he has my caviar properly chilled.
Remind me to tweet a picture to Sean Hannity about like a picture of my closet with all my shirts from Target.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I'll do that.
Yeah, my two pairs of jeans.
Again, no one gets into journalism for the money. We get into it because we believe in the truth, and we believe in telling the story of and giving voice to the voiceless. And I don't know many people that got into journalism just to be a douche.
Yeah, no, I mean it's trying
to, for good reason.
Right, I think people want to try to make the world a better place somehow, and you may not agree with how some of us are going about that, or about how, you know, are some of us who share opinions. You might not agree with those opinions, but yeah, you're right. It's not we're not in it for the cash money.
Nope, because there is none.
Yes.
All right, my friends. This has been Amy Guth and Rex Hupke talking about politics. We will be back next time. Until then, see you soon.